This is Marcia Savage with SearchFinancialSecurity.com. I recently met with Brenda Buteau, Senior Manager of Forensic Services at Crowe Horwath. Buteau is a certified fraud examiner and certified anti-money laundering specialist. In this interview, she talks about some of the cases she's investigated and offers advice for companies on spotting potential fraudsters. I think you'll find what she says really interesting.
Brenda, thanks so much for joining us today.
Certainly, it's my pleasure.
Well, I guess to start, talk a little bit about what you do.
Okay. I am a certified fraud examiner and a certified anti-money laundering specialist. And as far as what I do, the majority of my time is spent with clients investigating allegations of fraud. I've spent a number of years in financial institutions where I focus primarily on anti-money laundering investigations, but we've also looked at loans and employee embezzlement and just a variety of things. So my time is spent investigating allegations of fraud.
Well, I'm wondering if there's a memorable case that in financial services that you might be able to talk about.
I'd love to talk about a couple. A couple come top of mind for me. One of my cases involved a pretty large retirement fund, and the chief benefit officer, through an investigative reporter's article that was found in the newspaper, was found to be identified to be a convicted felon. And so, of all things, he was a convicted felon of identity theft. So this particular case, the reason it comes top of mind to me is because it was so complex. We started off with a number of challenges for the investigation to begin with. Some of the challenges included just the massive amount of data that we had to look at. The computer system that all of these transactions were housed in was specifically built for this client. So there wasn't, we had to go in and learn the system as well, and we had to rely a lot on the developers, and as we were walking down the process too, that provided some significant challenges when we requested data. One of the other challenges is in this particular investigation, we had a number of stakeholders. You had the pension fund itself that was a stakeholder. You had all of the people that were involved in the pension fund. But then as far as the investigation, we were working with the local police department, the attorney general, the IRS, the FBI, and they all had their unique hot buttons, if you will, and their transaction thresholds for dollar-wise. So it was really a big challenge to take all of these transactions. We did find a number of schemes while we were there, so we did walk away with quite a number of convictions. So that's one that comes top of mind. Another one, people are often found saying that, you know, one person can't make a difference. And I'm here to tell you one fraudster can make a difference. The reason I say that is because there was another financial institution who had a head teller, and this head teller by herself was responsible for taking over $7 million of cash from this particular institution that was only a $52 million credit union. So unfortunately, this one person's actions caused the 70-year-old institution to basically be purchased and no longer conduct business in its own name any longer. She did this through actually stuffing cash in her clothes and then using transactions through the general ledger through the vault reconciliation accounts to hide her embezzlement. So one fraudster can make a significant impact to your institution.
Wow, that's pretty amazing.
It is.
In your current or more recent investigations, are you finding that financial institutions are more worried about finding this sort of thing now? Tracking down fraud?
Yeah, I think no matter if it's a financial institution or just a business in today's environment, I mean, the environment today is just crazy. All kinds of businesses are looking for ways to protect their company. People are taking pay cuts to keep their jobs. Others are losing their jobs. And for many people, they're just one missed paycheck away from being homeless. So pressure is extremely volatile in the fraud triangle. People, when you talk about white-collar fraud, you talk about opportunity, rationalization, and pressure. And pressure is also referred to as an unshareable need. So as you can imagine, in today's environment, everybody needs to really take a look at how fraud could occur within their company or their financial institutions by their employees. So a lot of companies we're seeing are taking more seriously allegations of fraud. They're putting in more hotlines. Hotlines are one of the ways that more allegations of fraud are discovered than any other type of transaction or any other type of reporting mechanism. So even though we have internal and external auditors, even though we do have internal controls and we're looking for specific types of transactions and we're doing testing and sampling, fraud still occurs, and we're looking at our employees not only to report the fraud, but to help us investigate the frauds as well.
What other advice can you offer to companies on how to spot employees who might commit fraud?
There are a number of indicators that can help you, or red flags, if you will. We use red flags to say that this particular situation could be a sign of fraud. A red flag does not mean that fraud is occurring. So if you look at the Association of Certified Fraud Examiners report to the nation for 2008, let me describe to you what a potential fraudster looks like. 35% of them are between the age of 41 and 50. Over 50% of them are 40 years or older. 52% have been with the organization for more than 5 years. 40% are receiving income of less than $50,000 a year. 49.1% are males. And more frauds are committed, as you can imagine, in the accounting department, but the largest losses are occurring in the legal department. So if you listen to the description, it sounds like it's your trusted employee who is also your potential fraudster. So some of the things that you can do in order to spot your potential fraudster within your company is simply know your employees. A lot can be said about social engineering. Looking for pain that could be caused within the particular employee's environment. Did the spouse lose a job? Are they experiencing an illness? Is a child getting ready to go to college? Those type of things. But you have to monitor your employees. You have to look at the way they're doing their daily tasks. And in the monitoring world, what I'm trying to focus on and what I've seen others focus on as well is we're not looking at the bottom line number anymore. In other words, looking at accounts payable, we can't just focus on the fact that the accounts payable balance for May of 2009 was $7,000. What we have to look at is how did the employees go about their daily activities to generate that $7,000 balance. And monitoring using your computer can help you do that. I mentioned earlier that tips are the best ways that frauds are discovered. And what I challenge my clients or people that I talk to is to turn their laptop or their computer system into a whistleblower. Think about the transactions that their employees do and find ways to alert yourself very timely that something is amiss. Set expectations, and when those expectations aren't met, then there's your red flag.
Can you elaborate a little bit more on that?
Sure, let me tell you a story about a refund. In an environment, let's say that it takes three people to process a refund. So step one is done by person A, step two by person B, step three by person C. So this refund travels between departments as well, so you would expect that the refund would take probably 5 days to be processed. So now you have two expectations for a refund. You expect three people to then be involved and at least 5 days to transpire from day one to when the check is actually generated. So what I would suggest then is use your computer to test your expectations. Go in and make sure that each transaction took three steps, but go a little bit further and make sure three unique user IDs processed each of those three steps. Then do a test and determine whether or not the time from step one to step three was greater than five. If it's less than five, then there are ways or software packages that you can use that would send you an email, for example. So when this particular situation occurs, you would get an email. It would be a lot easier to go to those three people within 1 or 2 days of that transaction occurring and finding out what exactly happened, or doing your own investigation without talking to these people, as opposed to waiting to the end of the month or the end of the year when you're doing your annual financial audit. So that's what I'm kind of alluding to, understanding how employees do their job, and then testing for those expectations.
Do you find that companies perhaps are getting a little bit better at that, or what do you see as some of the common mistakes that financial institutions make when it comes to fraud prevention?
Unfortunately, we all are in the mindset that we want to trust and validate later, but that's exactly what we need not do. We want to you want to trust your employees, but you want to verify as well. A lot of times when we go in and we set up dual control and people get upset, you want to tell those employees that you're protecting them by putting these controls in place. So some of the things that we've seen is when people are downsizing, that they're shifting responsibilities within the banks. So banks really need to look at their risk profiles, because I am almost positive that in the majority of cases, if you sat down and talked about how you did business today and how you did business when you set up your risk profile maybe 2 or 3 years ago, you have significant risks today that are not being monitored. So you constantly have to go back and look to see where risks are, and then take it to the next step and say, how are we going to test for those risks? Are we going to test manually? Are we going to test by observation? Are there ways that we can test throughout the computer system? How can we test those? A lot of people are struggling with dual controls, and what we do is we challenge them to think, how can you use dual control with your computer? You know, if you don't have two people able to do dual control, is a person in the computer a substitute? So we're looking at ways and helping people to be more creative on looking at their internal controls.
When you are working an investigation, are there any kind of mistakes that institutions make or difficulties that you run into?
A lot of times what happens when we have an investigation is that people like to talk about it on their break, and that's probably the biggest risk that we have, is when we involve employees of the institution, they need to realize that the information is extremely confidential. We also need to base what we're doing on facts. You know, just because you think an employee, you don't like a particular employee, this might be your opportunity to get back at them because you didn't get the promotion and they did. So again, focusing on facts. One of the things, too, that we struggle with is when we ask for documentation, getting the documentation that really supports what we're doing. And then one of the significant challenges is vocabulary. To me, the word reconciliation or balance may be something completely different to someone else. And let me give you an example of that. I asked a vault teller if she balanced her vault every day, and she said, of course I do. So I went the next step and I said, would you please walk me through that process? She had a binder where in black she wrote the cash that she received from other tellers. In red she wrote what she sold to other tellers. And at the end of the day she wrote the balance in blue. She took an adding machine and added all of those figures up to verify that the arithmetic was correct. And she taped that adding machine tape on the back of the sheet where all of these transactions were recorded. So when I asked her if she, so that to her that was balancing. I asked her then, how do you go about counting the cash in the vault? And she explained to me that counting the cash in the vault took quite a bit of time, and they don't have that much time. They want to close out and get home for the day, so they only count the cash maybe once a week. So to me, she didn't balance the vault. She did the arithmetic for the transactions, but she didn't balance the vault. So making sure that the vocabulary that we're using is understood on both sides of the table.
Got it. What advice would you have for companies on how to best work with fraud investigators?
I would tell anybody that is working with a fraud investigator to be open to suggestions. Brainstorming is probably one of the best ways to uncover fraud. When you're talking about the way that a transaction should be entered in a system, you know, there are many ways that transactions get entered. There's the policy and procedure way, which are the books that gain the dust in the back of the storeroom, so those aren't really accurate. there's the trained way that people go through training. They receive, you know, you do this step, and this step. But then there's the actual way that employees do their business and their shortcuts that they found. So we find that the employees who are very open with us and say, you know, this is the way we're supposed to do it, but we can also do it this way. So being very honest and candid with the investigators and say, you know, it may be policy that we do it this way, but let me show you some of the ways that we actually do it. So that just unbridled honesty with the investigators. And then again, you know, keeping the information confidential. You know, keep in mind that the person who hired you too might be involved in the fraud. So when we're going about our tasks, we don't necessarily report until we're at a certain point within our investigation all of the steps that we're taking, just to make sure that the person that we're working for isn't involved and that we've not blown the cover, if you will.
Well, Brenda, this has been really fascinating. Thanks so much for joining us today.
Thank you so much, and good luck.